Tentor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Strife by Craig Halloran, narrated by Tim Campbell. Chapter 1. The air inside Stonewater Keep was chill, despite the fireplaces blazing within Lord Darkin's study. Wind whistled through the small open portals above the rafters, stirring the floor-length curtains that softened the otherwise dreary room. Flat-footed, his heart shooting through his throat, Nath stood beside Mayfon. When he'd made the suggestion that Lord Darkin was his brother, he'd hoped he was wrong, even though he knew deep down that he wasn't. Now he looked at his older brother as though for the first time, numbness spreading throughout him. His knees weakened, but he fought and stood upright. "If you're going to talk, then talk, Darkin. I'm willing to hear you out." Darkin's copper eyes brightened, an eyebrow arched. The formidable man in a suit of black leather armor could not hide his surprise the way he did with all his other deceptions. Instead, the hard expression in his angular jawline softened. He unbuckled his sword belt and set it aside on a table beneath the window that shone glumly on the pool of Eversight. He eyed Fang, which Nath held tightly in his grip. Nath leaned the sword against a wall. Twisting the copper rings on his fingers, Darkin said, "Let's have some wine and sit." His eyes slid over to catch Mayfon's gaze. "Family only." Mayfon's suit of black leather armor groaned softly as she stiffened. Her short, damp, blonde hair clung to her forehead. The beautiful elf still had new sweat on her face and neck from the humid heat of the Sultan's Lake of Fire. They'd only been transported from that location minutes before by the magic bracelets Darkin had given them as tokens of friendship. Mayfon laid her gorgeous eyes on Nath's for a fleeting moment, then she bowed to Darkin and quickly departed. Darkin moved over to a small study table and pulled out one of its four wooden chairs. "Please, have a seat, brother." As Darkin moved to the other side of the table, Nath took a seat in the chair. All the while, his mind rifled through images of everything that had transpired at the Sultan's Burning Lake. Riding back to aid Lord Darkin, he found himself facing his old friends, his brother Sliver and his former weapons trainer, Master Elwyn. His joy of seeing them was fleeting, however, as he discovered Darkin battling the both of them. Darkin was a moment away from slaying Master Elwyn. A grisly dwarf hurled a hammer that smote Darkin and saved Elwyn. Darkin shrugged off the mighty blow of the hammer like a dog shed water. Master Elwyn flew toward Nath, arms outstretched. Her eyes were filled with desperation and worry. Nath reached for her grasp, only to find himself teleported back to Stonewater Keep. That was when it all came together, and in his heart, he knew Darkin was his brother. A bottle of wine, shaped like an hourglass, waited on the table, with four cherry-colored glass goblets. Darkin filled two goblets halfway to the rim. "This wine is made beneath the ground, in the vineyards of the Crystal Gnomes. It is a very unique flavor, but I think you'll find it delicious." Nath thirsted. He leaned over the table, took the goblet, and drank. He didn't stop until he finished the glass. He didn't recall being so thirsty, but he was. He was hungry, too, for answers. "You said that you were trying to protect me from Sliver and Elwyn. What did you mean by that? They're my friends, my family. They are your family, too." "Pfft." Glowering, Darkin refilled Nath's goblet. "They are not my family. What sort of family turns on their own brother? No, Nath. The same as the rest of the dragons, they cannot be trusted, at least not by the likes of us. We are different, are we not?" Nath shrugged. He liked Darkin and adored him like a brother. Darkin had been there for him since the beginning, and now that he knew that the man was indeed his brother, he found the bond between them strengthening. For the first time in his life, he felt that he wasn't truly alone. He wasn't the only one that was a dragon born a man. He drummed his fingers on the table with one hand and drank again. "So you were the one that slaughtered the fledglings? The one that the dragons told me about? You were the reason that they don't like me?" Darkin smiled easily. His head tilted slightly to one side, causing his rich, rust-colored locks to fall over that shoulder. Narrowing his eyes, he said, "That is what they told you, didn't they? But how do you know the truth, huh, Nath? The truth is this. The dragons framed you the same way that they framed me. You see, dragons consider us to be abominations. Dragons born as men are a curse. And for the likes of us to rule one day. He rapped his fist on the table. Ha! But we are supposed to rule, Nath said. Aren't we? Of course we are. Actually, I am supposed to rule, being the older of the two brothers, but they managed to banish me. Don't let the dragons fool you. They are very clever. Sure, Sliver and Elwyn seem honest enough, and they can be your friends, but they are not the ones that pull the strings. It is the High Dragon Council that does that. They weren't very approving of you, were they? They seemed eager to condemn me, but Sliver bailed me out. Nath combed his fingers through his hair. His intentions were good, I know it. Sliver is a babysitter, that is all. I assure you that he is as jealous of you as he is of me. Darkin propped an elbow up on the table and leaned over it. Tell me, you spent time with Sliver, didn't you? Nath nodded. And he talks very much, doesn't he? Again, Nath nodded in agreement. Now think about this. Don't you find it odd that Sliver wants to walk like a man, even admits that he is a man? When you met him along the road, coming from Old Hen, was he not disguised as a man? Nath sat back. That was Sliver, wasn't it? Darkin nodded. And Elwyn. They were following us, but I got onto their little game. For me, it was their eyes that gave it away, and there was a tightness in their speech that also alerted me. Nath was well aware of Sliver's desire to be a man and act like a man. He'd been that way ever since he'd known him. But he'd also been kind. So why didn't they reveal themselves on the road from Old Hen? They were sizing us up. I don't think they want to harm you, Nath. I think they want to keep you controlled. But it is me that they fear, and no doubt they recognize me. He took a long drink. Staring at the cherry glass goblet, he said, Ah, by the horn of Guzan, that's good, isn't it? I suppose. Just so you know, there was a reason that I insisted on sending you and Mayfon ahead toward Advent. I wanted to verify that we were being followed. The ghouls were one matter to deal with, but when we dispatched them, I still wasn't settled. Thanks to Galtor. His voice cracked and he sobbed, then recovered. May peace be with him. He was a fine servant. He cleared his throat. Well, thanks to his final efforts, I detected Sliver and Elwyn coming. To spare your confusion, I chose to confront them myself. That's when they attacked me. My actions were self-defense. Believe me when I say they were intent on killing me. What about the dwarf? Who was he to keep company with dragons? Nath asked. The fierce-looking, as stout as stone dwarf had slung a heavy-headed warhammer like a stick. A henchman of the dragons, nothing more, nothing less. I have to admit that his weapon stung me. Darkin rubbed his chest. If not for the shield spell I'd cast, no doubt my ribs would be showing on the other side of my back. I noticed that you didn't seem too fazed. It was uncanny. What can I say? Darkin raised his fingers, and a mystical spark danced between the tips. I'm quite the magician. And so can you be, Nath. There is so very much that I can teach you about the deep magic that dwells within you. Once again, Darkin was proving to be as charming and reassuring as ever. His words were so smooth that not believing everything he was saying was difficult. But Nath didn't want to get off track. More questions burned inside of him. I'm not interested in magic right now. I still have more questions. Darkin nodded. You'll have to forgive me, Nath, but if you only understood how excited and relieved I am to have you by my side, the way it should be. I know that I should have told you sooner, perhaps, but would you have believed me? He reached across the table and gripped Nath's hand in his. I felt strongly that I needed to earn your trust first. After all of the trouble you've been through, I'm grateful that after all we've been through, you are willing to listen to my side of the story. He squeezed Nath's hand harder. Grateful. Nath squeezed back and pulled his hand free. Your words are as welcoming as a warm waterfall. But I still have many doubts. He looked Darkin right in the eye. You were the reason that I was banished from Dragonholm, aren't you? It was for your own safety, Nath. Please, hear me out. I had to reach you, and I've been trying for decades. He eyed Nath, looking for approval. I swear it. Crossing his arms over his chest, Nath said, "You still have my ear?"
"Thank you, brother."
Long-faced, Darkin eased back into his chair.
"Being the only man in Dragonholm, it was lonely. But probably like you, I built strong relationships with the Triadine. Even after I was banished, I found a way to stay in contact with them as they came and went on occasion. Jazan was a close friend, and I told him if another like me were to arrive, we would have to set him free. I set forth carefully laid plans that literally took decades, and they might have taken decades longer. But," Darkin pointed at Nath, "Jazan took matters into his own hands. He wanted to rush the timetable that might take another 50 years. Hence, he acted on his own."
Darkin's voice started to rise.
"The fools set you up the same way they set me up, by slaying the fledglings. With that, the full weight of the dragons would come upon you. Knowing that Balzerth would spare you, he was certain that you would be banished."
He shook his head sadly.
"I never wanted a single drop of fledgling blood to be spilled. The older ones, they can defend themselves, well, I could live with that. But not the loss of innocence."
He wiped his eyes.
"I was angry when Chazan returned, and I could not let his callous actions go unpunished. So I punished him. Actually, I humiliated him. I don't think it sat well with him. When I wasn't watching, he turned against me."
Nath sat up. "So he took over the keep?"
"In a manner of speaking, yes," Darkin sobbed. "And he died by my own hand. It was hard to lose a brother like that."
Nath's own heart sank. More lives seemed to have been lost on account of him. His core was shaken by Darkin's sorrowful tale.
"I hate to hear that." "Listen to me. I've made my mistakes. I admit it. And don't think that their blood lies on your hands, Nath. Countless innocent lives will be saved because of our union if we work as one. You see, Nath, as one, no power on Nalzambor can stop us."
"What do you mean? Stop us from what?"
"Nalzambor is not meant to be ruled by dragons. It never was. But it is destined to be ruled by the next generation of dragons. Dragons that walk as men. That is us. If we are united, no one, not dragons, not the elves, men, nor dwarves, can stop us. Not even our father Balzerth. We are the future."
Chapter 2. With a furrowed brow, Nath tried to soak all he discussed with Darkin in.
"You're thinking deeply, Nath," Darkin said. "I know you well. I've seen that furrowed brow before. Tell me, what is on your mind?"
Nath looked at his brother and asked, "Do you hate our father?" Darkin sank in his chair and sighed.
"Balzerth was very good to me. He treated me like a prince. I was showered with his adoration, but he has a blind spot, it seems. I tried to tell him how the other dragons would treat me, but he would just say, 'Not all of them will accept you, but give them time, most of them will.'"
"Most of them," he finished in a whisper. His gaze looked right through Nath.
"I'm certain that most of them didn't like me. I tried to explain their ugly disposition to father, but he turned his ears away. It was hurtful. But inside those grand, cavernous halls, I heard the dragon's whispers echoing through the channels. 'Beware of Crixus, the son of Balzerth is evil.'"
Turning his head, Nath said, "Crixus?"
"Crixus is my birth name. I changed it to Darkin soon after I was banished. I had to start all over again. Alone in the world, I had to forge my own path, never to return to the Mountain of Doom again."
"You mean Dragonholm?"
"It is the same, but I call it the Mountain of Doom, for that is what it is, for me and many others, anyway."
Darkin fixed his confident stare back on Nath. "What are you thinking? I can see doubt lingering in those golden eyes. Tell me, what bothers you?" Nath heavily contemplated everything Darkin had said. He'd given nearly perfect explanations and answers to Nath's questions. Still, deep inside, Nath was troubled by what the Lord of the Dark and the Day said. But he still yearned to believe him. He wanted to give in.
"So, your goal is to rule Nalzambor, and you want me to help you? I don't see how this can be done by the two of us. And what about the dragons? They certainly aren't going to step aside.
Darkin stretched out his hand like a ringmaster playing the crowd. That's exactly my point. What are the dragons doing? Nothing. He hit his fist on the table. They claim to have saved Nalzambor during the Great Dragon Wars hundreds of years ago, but in truth they were the cause of it. If there were no dragons, there wouldn't be great wars. They draw strife, and their interactions with people. Why, they have no interactions with people. They stay in the sky, aloof, turning a blind eye to the chaos beneath them.
Nath scratched in front of his ear with his finger and asked with incredulity, What are you proposing? That we kill the dragons? There is no army that can stop them. It would be impossible. It's madness.
No, brother. You are misunderstanding my intentions. Darkin's voice softened. I don't want to fight the dragons, but I do want to be rid of them. You see, their time on Nalzambor is long past. Their purpose has been served. They have evolved, and we are proof of that evolution. We are the link of change. They don't want to admit it, but now the time has come for them to depart this world to the land beyond the murals.
Nath leaned back in his chair and squeezed the end of its arms. Darkin had given him another matter to consider. The last time he'd seen his father was just before he moved into the land beyond the murals. Balzerth had never spoken much on what that was, and perhaps now was the time Darkin could shed more light on the matter.
I don't know much about the land beyond the murals, Nath said. I guess I never paid that much attention. I always thought that it was a place where dragons went when they died, but that was never the case with father.
No, it's not a place where dragons go to die. It's a place where dragons go to live, Darkin said. Forever.
You mean they can't die in there at all?
As I understand it, it's not a place of strife, but a place of tranquility. The dragons live in peace.
Darkin shifted in his chair and twisted his rings.
It's a real world, the same as this, but only dragons exist there. You see, though dragons live a very long time, they are still mortal in this world. They can die or be killed, as we both know. But once they've served their purpose here, they can move on to another sanctuary. You see, dragons are not originally born of this world. They are from another plane, in the land beyond the murals. To Nalzambor, they are invaders, pretending to be protectors.
I don't understand.
Darkin rose from his chair and walked through the chamber. His voice became that of a master storyteller, captivating and rich.
If you search the ancient texts, you will discover that Nalzambor was a very dark and dangerous place. Only the two-legged races existed, and the giants ruled. It was a world of devastation and destruction. There weren't very many good people in those dark times, mostly the elves, but even they could be jaded. But the time came when the finest of the races, desperate for salvation, put aside their pride and gathered. As one, they chose to combine their abilities to find someone or something to combat the strife and darkness that consumed them. They journeyed into the hot belly of the Mountain of Doom to seek sanctuary and work together in a collective peace. It was there that they discovered the land beyond the murals and opened it. The dragons, strong, sleek, and mighty, came forth. They battled against the terrors that ruled this world. Giants, titans, ogres, and their hordes of orcs, gnolls, and goblins were flung from their lofty perches. The ground quaked. They waged war for centuries, but the dragons finally wore the dark enemy down. Peace spread throughout the world. The land's rich soil became fertile. The hordes of evil had been pushed back into the darkness whence they came.
Well, not all of them, Nath said. I still see one too many orcs running around. If I were a dragon then, I'd have wiped out all of them.
There are bigger problems than the orcs. They are just difficult, stubborn, and stupid people.
Darkin stood behind Nath and patted his shoulders. But there is more to the story. Hanging on every word, Nath thirsted for more. He drank more wine. I'm listening.
Chapter 3
Darkin and Nath moved over to a window that looked over the river to the wind-tousled grasses on the other side of the waters. Darkin stood with his hands behind his back, chin up and a grim expression on his face.
"Little brother, you need to remember that the dragons are not of this world, and now Zambor has a strength all of its own. For it is a land rich in magic, and the magic can be used for good and evil. You see, many dragons were tainted by the temptation of evil. They moved apart from the others and lurked in darker places. They enjoyed the attention that the wicked races showed them. Many of them were worshipped as gods."
"That led to the Great Dragon Wars, didn't it?" Darkin smiled at him.
"Yes, though the histories you read probably didn't mention that was the actual cause. One has to be careful with who wrote the history that you are reading, and that was a very dark time for the dragons. But, thanks to our father, Balzerth, and his strong leadership, the black dragons that became a scourge upon this world were defeated. Now Zambor has been safe ever since, and I strongly believe that the dragon's purpose has been served. Now the time has come for them to move on. It would be for the better."
Nath looked directly at him and asked, "For them, or you?"
"For all of us."
He moved to the pool of Eversight and beckoned Nath over. He waved his hands over the clear waters of the pool, which rippled, colors taking shape within.
"This is my fear, brother. The dragons have succumbed to darkness before, and I believe many are still tainted by it. They conspired against me and you because they know that we are the future of this world. As the knights in Quintuclin would say, it's a changing of the guard. But they want to rule this world and not protect it, for dragons are not without their own ambition."
Nath gazed into the pool of Eversight. The swirling image within started to sharpen into a living picture of dragons flying the skies and breathing hellish fires that scorched the earth.
"If dragons do not depart back into the land beyond the murals whence they were summoned, I am certain that history will repeat itself."
Darkin's copper eyes glowed.
"The black dragons will rise again, stronger than before, and if they are not defeated, what then? They will destroy the world. Now Zambor is at peace now. Order has been brought amongst the races. They've been shown how to defend their world, and thanks to the dragons they are stronger for it. The danger now is grave. The longer the dragons stay, the more likely the races will depend on them to bail them out of their troubles, and they won't be ready for the next conflict that could consume them. Look for yourself. See what I have envisioned."
The pool revealed dragons fighting one another in the skies. Cities burned beneath their beating wings. Men, women, and children marched in desperation from the devastation that had been wrought by war. Farmlands lay in rot and ruin. Mass graves were dug in cold and clammy soil. Towns large and small burned like an inferno. The giants teemed with dragons to enslave mankind once more.
"We can't let this happen again," Nath muttered.
The picture in the pool was so vivid that it made his brows sweat. "But how can you be certain that it will happen?"
"I am certain, because I can see the future, and I understand the nature of men and dragons. What I have shown you is inevitable, but I am trying to prevent it."
He passed his hands over the waters. The image faded back to a clear pool of water that rippled gently, then stopped.
"I need your help, Nath. Together we can do this and avoid the coming bloodshed."
He reached over and grabbed Nath's wrists.
"Join me. We can make Nal Zambor a perfect place."
Nath shook his head. He yearned to believe his brother and wanted to join his cause. Not fully convinced, he asked, "But how?" Chapter 4. With his bearded face set against the southern winds, Haxaw traveled all day and late into the night. The old knight slept away from the road, underneath the trees, rising before the call of the morning birds and heading down the roads again. The grizzled veteran of countless battles rode a chestnut steed with a shiny coat. He wore his one shirt of ringmail underneath a leather traveling tunic. On his hip, his sword Green Tongue, the Goblin Slayer, rested in its scabbard ready to go. Hacksaw puffed on his pipe, made from unicorn horn. An airy smoke was quickly taken away by the winds. He was not certain whether or not the pipe had been made from a unicorn's horn. After all, only a few men and women ever claimed to see them. But one thing was certain, the pipe had magic within, and it saved him. He took a deep breath and let out a stiff cough. Despite having been saved by the knight clerics of Quintuclin's legionnaires, Hacksaw was still sore and tender. The dark elves, calling themselves the Brothers of the Wind, had butchered him with a dozen arrows. Certain his fate was sealed, the last thought Hacksaw had was of going home. Instead, he was taken to the Legionnaires' Hall of Knights and brought back from the brink of death. Cardinals and jays flew across the road before him and vanished in the forest. A stir started in the branches. A sharp chirping and angry fluttering of wings followed. Hacksaw's shoulders slumped, and one hand on the reins, he swayed gently in the saddle. Then he sped the horse to a trot, thinking once again of the death he'd dodged. Thanks to the power of the pipe, he'd fooled Old Man Death once again. The pipe, a gift from his father, passed down from his grandfather, had been little more than a toy that lit tobacco on its own. But he remembered that when he was a young fella, able to sit on his grandfather's knee, his grandfather talked about the unicorn he felled. His grandfather said he'd killed it with an arrow that would slay anything, and that he made the pipe himself. Of course, he had no proof of the story. No unicorn hide or mane, no hooves or teeth, just a story. But his grandfather swore up and down the pipe had a very deep and special magic. His grandfather died when Hacksaw was young. That story was the last thing he remembered of his grandfather, who had hard hands, a bushy beard, kind eyes, and a smile that warmed the cold taverns of Husken. Hacksaw blew out a ring of smoke, looked to the sky, and said, "You were right, Grandfather." As for his father, a hard-working man who never smoked nor carried the pipe, he passed it on to Hacksaw when he became a legionnaire. His father, a stalwart laborer that cut down trees for a living, said, "Take this pipe of your grandfather's. Keep it with you for safety and comfort on your journeys." Hacksaw never saw his father alive again after that. He perished in a logging accident. Hacksaw, on a mission at the time, didn't get word until long after it happened, and his father's body was burned to ash, along with the wood that took him. In Husken, such burials were often customary. Now Hacksaw rode along with a dreadful feeling hanging over him like a great shadow. He'd abandoned Nath when he should have stayed close to the young man. As a result, he'd almost died for it. But now he still lived, thanks to a mystic bauble that his family had blessed him with. It saved him once before, but he doubted it would save him again. In his gut, he felt it had saved him so he could complete his mission. He had to find Nath and warn him. He just hoped he wouldn't be too late when he found him. Traveling at a brisk pace, he finally made it all the way down to Advent. The time was midday, and the winter frost had left the city, but the early spring winds still had a bite to them. He led his horse through the streets, spying all his surroundings, keeping a sharp eye out for elves. Not seeing anything out of the ordinary, he moved block after block through the sizable city, passing the storefront porches. Singing and string playing caught his ears. He tied his horse to a hitching post, walked up the steps to a porch, and entered a tavern filled almost to capacity. Hacksaw pushed his way in, took a stool, and sat at the bar. He ordered a pint of ale and took a look over his shoulder. On a low stage, Homer, now called Rome, sat on a stool singing a love ballad and playing a 12-stringed lute. His fingers moved over the strings with the nimbleness of a pixie. His soprano voice, as enchanting as a dove song, carried through the tavern, where dreamy-eyed women swooned. Hacksaw grunted. Homer was a pleasant-looking fellow, slight in build, with soft eyes and elegant features. His short, tousled hair was light brown, and he'd grown sideburns to the bottoms of his ears. The bard was not alone. On either side of him was a pair of elves. One strummed a cello with his bow, while the other blew into a wooden lute. Luckily, he did not recognize their faces. They weren't the ones that had tried to kill him on the river. Them he would have recognized. But he was certain of one thing. Judging by their dark eyes and hair, he knew they were Caligan. He guzzled half of his ale and wiped a sleeve across his mouth. He drank again. After days of riding on little more than water, the ale tasted very good. He ordered another, kept his back to the stage, and contemplated. I need to separate Homer from the elves. He patted the pommel of Green Tongue. If I have to kill them, then I'm going to.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?